Good evening. Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch, a judge on the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, was both praised and criticized by the Senate Judiciary Committee in a third day of hearings. The importance of the judge selected was highlighted for WBAI by social activist Tom Hayden at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
The Supreme Court has more after effects than even a presidential election. There's three or four possibilities in the next year for a new Supreme Court. And I'm old enough to know what that means. You get yourself 30 years of running room. That's why the conservatives are absolutely desperate.
Lindsey Graham, Republican senator from South Carolina, said Donald Trump made a good pick.
I think President Trump, with all of his problems and all of his mistakes, chose wisely when it came to this man.
But Graham pointed to Trump's lack of respect for the courts and for judges. After his travel ban was blocked, Trump said an appeals court hearing was disgraceful, that judges were more concerned about politics than following the law. His tweets disparaged a judge he called a so-called judge who issued the nationwide freeze.
And I want to say this, that when you rejected some of the statements that President Trump made toward judges as being, what were your words?
Senator, I spoke of when anyone.
Anyone. Which would include President Trump.
Anyone.
Okay.
Criticizes the honesty, the integrity, the decency of federal judges and what they do, or attacks their motives and how they come about arriving at their decisions. I know those people. I know how hard they work and how decent they are. I find that disheartening and demoralizing. That's what I have said. I'm not saying we're immune from attack from decisions. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have thick skin. My hide's pretty thick. And I know that the hides of federal judges have to be.
Well, I just want to associate myself with what you said about what President Trump said, that I thought it was really out of bounds. You're the most powerful man in the world, and judges work in quiet, dark corners. They have no political machine. They have no PAC. They can't go out and do news conferences. Of the three branches of the government, they're the most vulnerable. So I stand firmly with you and firmly with anybody. And my friends on the other side say that President Trump was really out of bounds.
But partisan divide was in full view at the hearing. Echoing Ted Cruz on Tuesday, Graham equates Trump's criticism of justices with criticism by House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi back in February. Here's what she said.
If you care about clean air, clean water, food safety, safety of medicine, workers' rights, shareholders' rights, class action suits against fraud in the securities industry, if you care about the enforcement with the values of the IDEA, addressing the concerns of children with disabilities, and saying in his case, children with autism should not have access to the same opportunities to reach their intellectual and personal best, this is what he has chosen. Elections have ramifications. He also, you all recall what a triumph the marriage equality decision was in the courts. That took action going through the courts, and he has criticized the progressives and condemned those who have turned to the courts to advance LGBT equality. But again, elections have ramifications, and as he has said, the president has said, far back as June, he saw a list of people who met the standard for the far right for issues that relate to a woman's right to choose, marriage equality, and more. And he made that commitment, which he honored in the worst possible way.
Senator Graham.
But here's what I wish some of y'all would do. Here's what Nancy Pelosi said. If you breathe air, drink water, eat food, take medicine, or in any other way interact with the courts, this is a very bad decision. That means picking you. I haven't heard one person on that side say, that is out of bounds. That is political garbage. To my good friend Ron Wyden, no senator who believes that individual rights are reserved to the people and not the government can support this nomination. Elizabeth Warren, let's not mince words. The nomination of Judge Gorsuch is a huge gift to the giant corporations and wealthy individuals who have stolen a Supreme Court seat in order to make sure that the justice system works for them. It's okay to criticize Trump, but apparently it's okay for you to slander this man, and none of you say a damn thing about it.
Wyden is referring to Barack Obama's pick for the Supreme Court Justice Merrick Garland. He was denied a hearing last year after the death of Antonin Scalia, which created an opening on the court. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had insisted that since a presidential campaign was underway, it was the right of the next president to fill the opening, a gamble which paid off when Trump nominated Gorsuch. Senator Patrick Leahy brought up the Emoluments Clause, a provision of the U.S. Constitution which prohibits U.S. office holders from accepting gifts from foreign countries. It hasn't attracted much attention, says Gorsuch, who says the issue hasn't been fully resolved. Then Leahy wants to know what vision Gorsuch shares with Donald Trump.
Well, the reason I asked Mr. Bannon, Mr. Priebus, and the president had closed-door interviews with you, and in these things, including this material I've just put in the record, they promised their donors a nominee that would bring a pro-corporate, socially conservative agenda to the court. Are you saying they're speaking for themselves, not for you?
I am.
Thank you.
Back in 2005, Neil Gorsuch was the number three aide in the George W. Bush Justice Department. That was until 2006 when Bush appointed him as a federal appeals court judge in Denver. That's where he's been ever since. Back then, in 2005, he was in the midst of conflicts over Bush's torture policies. He wrote glowingly about Guantanamo, where prisoners were being tortured, this after a visit around that time. Dianne Feinstein, longtime California senator on the Judiciary Committee, continued questions of Gorsuch begun on day two of the hearings. She said she sent documents to him, the first of which is on torture. Dianne Feinstein.
The document talks about the McCain and Graham amendments to the Detainee Treatment Act, which was before Congress in November and December of 2005. And it asked specific questions about the indictment of Jose Padilla, who was indicted on November 22, 2005. So the notes must have been on or after November 22, 2005. Take a look at your handwritten notes on page 2. The document says, has the aggressive interrogation techniques employed by the administration yielded any valuable intelligence? Have they ever stopped a terrorist incident? Examples. Your handwritten note says yes. My question is, what information did you have that the Bush administration's aggressive interrogation techniques were effective?
Gorsuch.
I was a lawyer. My job was as an advocate, and we were dealing with the detainee litigation. That was my involvement.
You actually answered the question.
Yeah.
Had no personal information.
Oh, no.
That you took the position of your client.
Yes.
And that, because I know a lot about what happened.
I know you do.
That circles around in my brain a little bit, because it seems to me that people who advise have an obligation to find the truth in these situations. And when we learned about what happened on the Intelligence Committee, the Gang of Eight learned earlier, we learned much later, I think it was 2006, we saw, and when we looked into it, we really saw the horrendous nature of what went on. The absence of supervision, the absence of direction, the contracting out to people who, in my view, were not qualified to do what they did. And I think terrible things happen. It's a closed chapter, but it should never again happen. This is America, and it's not what we stand for.
Feinstein then returns to Gorsuch's outlook as an originalist.
Do you agree with Justice Scalia's statements that originalism means there is no protection for women or gays and lesbians under the Equal Protection Law, because this was not the intent or understanding of those who drafted the 14th Amendment in 1868.
Senator, first of all, a good judge starts with precedent and doesn't reinvent the wheel. So the extent there are decisions on those topics, and there are, a good judge respects precedent. That's the first point. Second point I'd make is it would be a mistake to suggest that originalism turns on the secret intentions of the drafters of the language of the law. The point of originalism, textualism, whatever label you want to put on it, what a good judge always strives to do, and I think we all do, is strive to understand what the words on the page mean.
But originalism worries Feinstein as she reflects on the role of women in society. As one of three daughters, she points to Gorsuch, father of two daughters.
If one looks at originalism in my context, which is real life, I want your two daughters to have every opportunity they possibly could have, be treated equal, be able to control their own bodies in concert with their religion, their doctor, whatever it may be, and not be conscribed to a lesser fate because the law is interpreted in a backward sense. Does that make sense to you?
Senator, I understand your concern and I share it. I come from a family of strong women. My two teenage daughters, you're right. I want every opportunity for them that a young man has. I have a strong wife. Anyone who knows her knows that.
And
My mother.
But you are pivotal in this.
And Senator, I am daunted sitting here under the lights at the prospect of what's to come if I'm so fortunate to be confirmed. And I'm daunted by the job I currently hold.
And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI in New York, Pacifica Radio. Rhode Island Senator Democrat Sheldon Whitehouse came back to questions raised on day two of the hearings about dark money.
Let me go back into our history a little bit. In 1816, Thomas Jefferson expressed concern about, and I'll quote him here, moneyed corporations which dare already to challenge our government to a trial of strength. And a little bit more than around a century later, Teddy Roosevelt warned, and I'll quote Teddy Roosevelt, that unless the great corporations are controlled by the government, they will themselves completely control the government. Should the Supreme Court, in its decisions, keep in mind Thomas Jefferson's and Teddy Roosevelt's warnings about what can happen when massive economic powers jump the fence to become massive political powers?
Well, Senator, as you know, corporate speech, when it comes to the First Amendment, doesn't receive the same protections as individual speech. There is a difference in the doctrine there. So that's an example, perhaps, of an instantiation in law of some of the concerns you're expressing. Another instantiation or example to me is antitrust law, the Sherman Act, passed by this body and interpreted by the Supreme Court over many years now. Trust-busting era stuff. And it does try to keep competition as an important value in our legal system.
So let me elaborate a little bit on that point, because you have said that before in your decisions in the antitrust realm, that competition is an important value that judges should bear in mind as they're interpreting antitrust law and antitrust precedent. And I agree with you. I think it absolutely is. I think you also said that innovation is another such value, and I agree with you on that, too. My concern is that this Supreme Court right now, at least the Republican-appointed majority recently, particularly the Citizens United group, seems to not admit the possibility that the similar kinds of concentration of power that destroy competition and innovation in the economic market can also take place in the political marketplace and can destroy competition and innovation in the political marketplace. Do you see that principle, that there could be a point where political power is so concentrated that it, in effect, is crushing the opposition rather than allowing free competition as a potentiality that the court should bear in mind as it makes its decisions?
And, Senator, here I think of Buckley again, and its recognition that corruption and the appearance of corruption are legitimate interests that Congress can pursue in legislation. And that is an example of, I think, the principle you're talking about, which Citizens United also speaks of. It says there the record before it didn't satisfy the court that Congress's legislation in that particular case had established a case of corruption. I understand you disagree with that. But it did recognize that corruption in its appearance remains an area where Congress may legislate in the future.
So let's go to that point, because they did say that no amount of corporate spending, none, there is no limit on the amount of corporate spending in politics that could lead to either corruption or the appearance of corruption. To me, that is fanciful in the extreme. And they got to that point with I would say they did fact-finding, which they're not supposed to do, but I don't want to quarrel over that point with you here, because that's not the point of my question. So let's say what they did was they made some presumptions. One presumption that they made was that all this corporate political spending they unleashed was going to be independent of candidates. That was presumption one. Presumption two was that it was all going to be transparent. ExxonMobil was going to put up the ad saying, "We hate White House because he's fighting us on climate change, and you should be with us," and everybody would know who the players were. The third is that the back and forth that this would produce would not affect confidence in government. Now, I think that the facts, reality, as it has developed since the Citizens United decision, completely belies all three of those points. All of the major candidates for, at least most of the major candidates in the last presidential election, had what they called affiliated super PACs. I mean, what does affiliated mean? It does not mean independent. So clearly, just on that alone, it doesn't even pass the dictionary test. Clearly, there's no independence. As to transparency, this whole dark money problem belies their assumption of transparency. And public confidence has crashed in government since that decision. For, among other reasons, I think when you are sitting there looking at the TV and an ad comes on that says, "Vote for Senator Snooks or vote against Senator Snooks," and this ad is brought to you by Americans for Puppies and Prosperity, and everybody looks around and they know perfectly damn well there is no such real thing as Americans for Puppies and Prosperity. There's no real corporation running that. There's no real person running that. It's a screen. It's a front. It's a shell for the real actors behind it. I think that is very damaging to Americans' confidence in their government on both sides of the aisle, which I think is one of the reasons why all three of the major commentators on the Supreme Court have basically described them in the modern age now as instruments of the Republican Party. And I think it also is why the majority of Americans looking at the Supreme Court think they won't get a fair shake there against a corporation. In fact, 36%, more than a third, think that the court will be much more favorable to a corporation than to a person. So the question here for you is, would you be willing, if you came to the conclusion that the independence presumption or the transparency presumption or the confidence presumption of Citizens United were in fact wrong, to reconsider that case.
Senator, what I've got a couple of reactions to that, if I might.
But don't lose the answer to my question.
No, I'm going to start with that, but there's one other observation I want to make beyond it, if I might. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to promise you what I promise every litigant. And I hear a litigant before me asking for an overturning of a precedent. That's what I hear. And I hear arguments for that. And arguments for overturning precedent include changed circumstances. Okay? And that's what I'm hearing. That's the kind of nature of argument I'm hearing. That's something a judge takes seriously, of course. Always. And any litigant can come to court and argue anything. That's the beauty of our system. I will follow the law of judicial precedent in this area and every other area put to me. I will make no promise for the result in any case. That's not what judges do. We listen to the cases put to us.
And for the record, it's not what I want you to do. What I want you to do is to tell me that if the proper decision is that this was so wrongly decided it should be reversed, you'd be willing to go there based on proper judicial decision-making.
I will follow the law of judicial precedent in this and every other area, Senators, my promise to you. The other thing I would say that I would like to say is that two other things. One is there's room for not just further litigation, Senator, but legislation in all of these areas. If there are changed circumstances that Congress observes, it's free not just to bring a lawsuit, but to pass a bill of these areas. And finally, Senator, may I just finish?
You finish, but then let me come back to that.
Of course. The last thing I want to say is I'm distressed to hear you think that judges or the Supreme Court is an organ of a party. That to me is just, I know you feel that way, and that distresses me.
It distresses me too.
And I just don't.
Quite a lot.
I just don't see judging that way. And I don't see our rule of law that way. I don't see Republican judges, and I don't see Democrat judges. I see judges. And Senator, I think the rule of law in this country works. And it works so well that to speak like that diminishes what we have. And it is, for me, a failure to appreciate the beauty of our system, that we resolve hundreds of thousands of cases a year, almost always unanimously, as judges, that the disputes are limited to a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent, and that once we resolve them through the dispute process of litigation and we have precedent, that settles that problem and we can move on to the next one. It's a miraculous system, really.
In my time that remains, which is getting briefer and briefer, let me make two points. One, on the Tenth Circuit, I don't believe you hardly ever have party-line decisions made by your court. We looked, and I count only two in the entire time you've been on the court.
I really appreciate you pointing that out. Thank you.
It's a very different world where you are. When you get to the Supreme Court, now we have these 5-4 decisions that I pointed out. And it's 6-0, one party over the other's party's interests at the polls. It's 16-0, corporate interests versus human interests in litigation. There is a point where it becomes reasonable to discern a pattern. And I see a pattern, and it distresses me. Now, the point that I wanted to get back to, I've got 2 minutes left, was your question about Congress can do this. Congress can rewrite these laws. Congress can demand disclosure. Here's the problem. In the same way that a small competitor can be crushed by a dominant business in the economic market, once you let certain political interests achieve the kind of dominance that Citizens United has let them get, they can start to exert disproportionate control over Congress. And now Congress can't do that any longer because there's no longer a fair playing field. If the court can rebuild a fair and competitive playing field, then maybe we can do something about it. But to say to Congress that you should solve this while at the same time the court has put Congress in a position where it can't solve it because the unlimited power and the secret money of these interests is such a powerful and pernicious effect, is something that I'd like you at least to be thinking about as a point if you get to that court. I hope you will take that sincerely. You are quite expert in antitrust law. You understand that principle in the economic sphere. I urge you to consider that Citizens United has caused that to happen in the political sphere. And with that, my time has expired.
I would like to, if I might, just briefly,
you
Senator,
can proceed.
I just cheer you up a bit, I hope, about the judicial process. I think that you're right that there are some 5-4 decisions. There are. But what that overlooks, I think, Senator, are some facts that I shared, I hope, with the American people yesterday. That even at the Supreme Court, where they take the 70 or 80 hardest cases every year, where circuit judges have disagreed, and even then, only about 5% of cases get to me. So we're talking about a fraction of 1% of the cases. That they're unanimous with 9 justices appointed by 5 different presidents 40% of the time. It's a remarkable thing.
Look,
I'm proud of it.
I understand that, and I get it. But what we have as a right is to have the Supreme Court make a fair decision in every case.
I agree.
Not just 99% of them, but all of them. And I think these 5-4 decisions are a problem. You said earlier that sometimes, I think I'm quoting you correctly, sometimes big corporations can capture an agency. That's a well-known principle of administrative law and of economics. Just let's be sure that our Supreme Court doesn't get to be one of those agencies that's captured on any subject.
Rhode Island Senator Sheldon Whitehouse questioning Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Day 4 of the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing into the Supreme Court nominee continues on Thursday with witnesses set to testify. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.